This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening. Welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Yehiye Suhib in Washington. Coming up on Africa News Tonight...
Kenyan authorities have made more arrests in connection with last Tuesday's terrorist attack in Nairobi. Meanwhile, Kenyan officials are vowing to prevent further attacks.
That's Mohamed Yusuf reporting. Details coming up. Also, DRC new president Felix Tshisekedi will be inaugurated this week, but analysts say he will face many challenges. And Zimbabwe's political tensions continue to rise. We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story, Kenyan authorities have made more arrests in connection with last Tuesday's terrorist attack in Nairobi. Meanwhile, Kenyan officials are vowing to prevent further attacks. Mohamed Yusuf reports.
Kenya's top security agencies met in the coastal city of Mombasa to discuss ways to improve security and prevent attacks by militant group Al-Shabaab. The Islamist extremist group claimed responsibility for the attack on the Dusit D2 hotel and office complex that killed at least 21 civilians. Speaking at the conference, Interior Minister Fred Matiang'i said Kenyan forces are ready to repulse any attack.
We are alert and we remain alert 24/7. We are on duty 24/7 to serve our people, to ensure that our country remains secure and safe. And anyone who bets on attempting to disrupt our peace got some answers last week and will get many more answers if they try as we go along.
Kenyan officials say police and army troops killed all five gunmen who attacked the Dusit complex. Since then, authorities have arrested at least 11 people in connection with the attack, including four suspects who surrendered to police Monday in the eastern town of Isiolo. Dozens more have been brought in for questioning. Authorities acknowledge that Al-Shabaab continues to pose a threat. A sub-county police commander, Garissa County, Aaron Ombeo, says security officers stopped a suspected terrorist attack on a construction site.
We had these incidents whereby a known number of attackers attempted to enter into construction sites. That is the construction of the road between Garissa and Mondogashi. Unfortunately, as they were attempting to get in the premises, they shot at a female. She's stable. She's undergoing treatment at Garissa. Security officers guarding the facility, they had to respond to the action that the attackers fled to a known destination. We are still out there looking for the attackers.
Nairobi-based security expert Richard Tuta says Al-Shabaab is taking advantage of Kenya's political freedoms to operate. He says the country needs to strike a balance between freedom and national security.
Kenya is a country that upholds the rule of law. The moment you hear of a country being an open political system, it is a fact that some fundamental aspects of the human right are so much respected, including but not limited to the fact that the right to privacy, that is, and the moment there is the aspect of right to privacy, freedom of media, all these things, they serve as a conducive, they give an enabling environment for the operation of a terrorist organization.
Kenya continues to be on high alert, and security has been heightened in areas where Al-Shabaab is suspected to be recruiting youth and might have sleeper cells. Mohamed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
Zimbabwe's political tensions continue to rise, with the High Court today ruling that the government had no authority to shut down the internet over the past week, and the police have arrested the Secretary General of the largest trade union, Yaphet Moyo. In addition, President Emmerson Mnangagwa has cut short his trip to Europe and Central Asia. He says he is coming home to deal with the growing crisis as protests continue more than a week after he suddenly more than doubled fuel prices. As reporter Andy Gando reports from the city of Bulawayo, days of a stay-away protest and riots last week have imposed great costs on businesses in the city.
As the stay-away protests unfolded, rioting and looting soon gripped the high-density suburbs of Bulawayo. Bands of rioters went from shop to shop, looting basic goods such as meat, bread, cooking oil, and medicines. The hardest hit was the supermarket chain Shoppes, which has its roots in neighboring Botswana. By Friday evening, most of the shops around Bulawayo were not able to reopen as they had lost too much stock to looters. Business leaders in Bulawayo, such as Busisa Moyo, the chief executive of oil processing giant United Refineries, is among those who are rueing the destruction.
Today was just the day when we went back and we are reassessing what our position is, but we can confirm that 80% of our retail customers in high-density suburbs in Bulawayo, 80% of them, over 80%, have been affected by the protests and riots that took place over the last 3 days. We currently are unable to distribute to those customers. We are in discussions with our city customers who are also overwhelmed, those in the CBD.
Shop owners in a township this correspondent visited were not inclined to speak at present because of what one described as a tragedy of titanic proportions. Many of the shop owners are standalone outfits who built up their capital over years without bank support and thus face an uphill battle to get back on their feet. Moyo, whose company relies on these retailers to sell its products, agrees.
There are immense challenges, as you can imagine. The losses are huge. Some of the shops, we are told, to stock up a shop is anywhere between $100,000 up to $500,000 in just stock items for the larger stores. But you can also imagine the damage to property is running into millions. So quite a significant amount has been lost by business.
The protests were sparked by the government's decision a week ago to more than double fuel prices. That increase follows months of rapidly rising inflation and shortages of most basic goods. In addition, there are extreme shortages of foreign currency, and the country's de facto currency, the bond notes, is rapidly falling in value. Security forces cracked down harshly on the protests, with reports that at least 12 civilians were killed and hundreds injured. The government has taken to cutting off internet and social media access. There are reports of government-backed forces breaking into people's homes to beat men suspected of having taken part in protests. The United Nations, the United States, and other governments have called for calm and expressed concern over the reports of the security forces' abuse. Moyo deplored the wanton destruction of human life and property and called for dialogue among all the country's stakeholders.
I think there's a lot of anger. We have a lot of youth who over the years have not been employed, and obviously they are being taken advantage of. We also have criminal elements who have found their way to take advantage and take opportunity to what is happening. We continue to urge all parties to exercise restraint, to value human life, and to value property, because it's these properties that serve the community.
Some media reports say that in certain cases in the Bulawayo townships of Emakandeni and Ntumbane, police and soldiers were aiding the looting. To date, over 600 suspects are being held throughout the country and have been denied bail. Furthermore, one well-known member of ruling ZANU-PF Youth League, Godwin Gomwe, was arrested and subsequently released in connection with violent protesters. Reporting for VOA, this is Adi Gondo, Bulawayo.
Officially, at least, the dust has settled over the contentious election in the Democratic Republic of Congo. But analysts say this drama is far from over, especially with the man who claims to have won calling for protests. New President Félix Tshisekedi will be inaugurated this week, but analysts say he will face many challenges. VOA's Anita Powell reports from Johannesburg.
By official measures, Félix Tshisekedi has won the presidency of the Democratic Republic of Congo. The nation's highest court certified his win over the weekend, invalidating a victory claim by challenger Martin Fayulu. The African Union, which last week surprised observers by raising doubts over the poll, also pulled back and postponed its Monday visit to Kinshasa. Fayulu, whose claim to victory was backed by the influential Catholic Church's observer mission, has called on his followers to protest. But analyst Lisa Lovaldron of the Institute for Security Studies says Fayulu should not expect support from other African countries.
This is not over yet. The AU, in its statement where it postponed its visit to Kinshasa, said they take note of the Constitutional Court's confirmation of Félix Tshisekedi. There's going to be a summit of heads of state in the beginning of February, on the 10th and 11th of February in Addis Ababa. But it's never really had any real impact. If we look at all the years and all the drama in countries like Zimbabwe, in Chad, in Burundi, in the Republic of the Congo, governments who change their constitutions, leaders staying in power for a third, fourth, fifth mandate, and the AU just couldn't do anything because of a lack of political will by other leaders, because they don't want that kind of interference in their own situation, but also because of the institutional weaknesses.
Critics of Tshisekedi accused him of making a deal with outgoing President Joseph Kabila, whose favorite candidate was so obviously unpopular that the Kabila-aligned Electoral Commission could not have plausibly declared him the winner. Analyst Alyssa Jobson of the International Crisis Group, speaking from Addis Ababa, told VOA the continental body may push the new president into something that does not come naturally in the winner-takes-all world of Congolese politics. Compromise. Tshisekedi won the top seat, but Kabila's party won a parliamentary majority.
To govern, he's going to have to engage and work with the majority, I think he'd also be wise to reach out to the to Fayulu's camp, and I suspect that the AU will be encouraging to do that, and hopefully the regional organisations will do that too.
Lovaldron notes the new president could also face pushback from key allies. Leaders of South Africa, Kenya, Burundi, and Tanzania have officially congratulated Tshisekedi, but there were some notable holdouts.
I think interesting is the ones that have been silent and the heads of state that have not congratulated Tshisekedi, like, for example, Angola, which is a major player in the DRC. We haven't heard any statements from Angola, up to now. And, of course, Uganda and Rwanda. Uganda, we are told, Yoweri Museveni was also very critical of this whole election process, and he was behind, one of the leaders behind the AU statement of last week. So slowly a picture is starting to emerge of who were playing this game, for and against the Kabila government and Félix Tshisekedi.
Tshisekedi, the son of the former opposition leader, campaigned on a platform of change and renewal for a nation that has been ruled by the Kabila family, father and son, since 1997. By winning, he has proven an opposition leader can win in Congo. Now, as he stares down his inauguration, he faces a more daunting question. Can he govern? Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
Nineteen past the hour, you're listening to African News Tonight on The Voice of America. Police in the city of Latina, south of Rome, staged a major operation smashing a criminal ring that had been exploiting up to 400 migrant workers. Police say hundreds of workers that were engaged in work on farms were living in inhumane conditions. The operation was the result of an 18-month investigation that included the arrest of six people. A trade unionist and labor inspector were among those implicated in the probe. Most of the exploited were either North Africans or Romanians. Reporter Josephine McKenna spoke with my colleague Kim Lewis about the operation, as well as Pope Francis's latest message on migrants and human trafficking.
Well, we've heard a great deal about migrant agricultural workers being exploited across Italy in different regions. But this was a significant bust by the police in the city of Latina, just south of Rome. They claimed to have smashed a criminal ring that was exploiting up to 400 migrant workers. Now, hundreds of these workers are engaged in work on farms, being forced to work 12 hours a day, paid as little as €4 an hour, just over $4 an hour. And for the first time, the police have successfully arrested six Italians who are involved in this ring. And what's really disturbing is those six included a trade unionist and a labour inspector. So they have been corrupted, allegedly corrupted, in this organisation as well.
And where are the people now? What is their condition as well?
Well, we've heard that these migrants were living and working in human conditions, and that sounds really dramatic. It's not clear what's happened to them now. Most of the exploited either came from North Africa or Romania, according to media reports. It's not absolutely clear where they've actually been relocated to, but this is the result of a long-running investigation involving around 50 witnesses, and it's lasted around 18 months. So the police are hoping that this kind of exposure may be able to be translated to other areas of Italy where they can clamp down on this kind of abuse and exploitation.
I understand also that the Pope Francis, is putting migrants and human trafficking in the forefront of his agenda.
That's right. This is something that Pope Francis feels very strongly about. He mentions it quite often, his concern about the numbers of people being forced to leave their homes around the world due to poverty or conflict or famine. And now he's putting migrants and human trafficking back on the agenda. He has released a book of his messages on migrants called Lights on the Ways of Hope. And the church wants to reach out to bishops and dioceses around the world, encouraging clerics to be more proactive in fighting this problem. And as part of that, the Vatican's going to hold a major conference on trafficking and migrants in April this year.
And I also understand there are new figures that were released for 2019 regarding migrants traveling to Europe.
That's right. We've seen a dramatic fall in crossings across the Mediterranean in the last few months, in particular in Italy, which has clamped down on migrant arrivals. But new figures released by the International Organization for Migration for the first 2 weeks of January in 2019 shows that 4,200 migrants arrived in Europe across the Mediterranean compared to 2,360 for the same period last year. So we're seeing a spike there. Most of the migrants appear to be going for Spain because Greece, Italy and other countries, as we know, have taken a much harder line on migrant arrivals. And the IOM also says that 83 migrants lost their lives in the first 2 weeks of this year. So a very worrying trend, very difficult weather conditions at the moment, as we know, with the winter weather and high seas. This is a trend that they will be hoping won't be continued into the future in terms of the fatalities, at least.
Did they say why there is a spike, especially, as you say, this time of the year in the colder months?
It seems so unusual, but I think it's an indication of the desperation of many people in Africa, those who've made that perilous journey through Libya, suffering from exploitation and torture in some cases there in Libya. But some of these arrivals are probably coming also through Tunisia, directly making that journey directly to Spain.
That was reporter Josephine McKenna in Rome speaking with VOA's Kim Lewis. Rwanda's government has banned ads for health services that aren't sanctioned by recognized medical bodies. The Ministry of Health says such ads, including long promos, have become excessive in the mainstream and social media. The ministry says regulations have to be followed by all people in the health sector, along with those who sell drugs and the media. Uje Nuimana has details from Kigali.
The Ministry of Health has issued an order that prohibits anyone from advertising drugs and medical services, whether it's in audio, print, or social media. Diane Gashumba, the Minister of Health, said all such advertising, which has become a booming business, is banned without written authorization from her ministry. Malik Kayumba, the ministry spokesperson, said the regulations mainly target uncertified people who conduct medical activities without the requisite medical skills. Just take a moment and listen to various radios, especially during night hours. You understand how fake physicians or the so-called medical practitioners mislead the public. The negative impacts are there as many believe them and stop going to certified hospitals for treatment. Most of them say they have special drugs for serious disease, such as cancer, or have drugs that cure many diseases. The ministry claims as a result, many people spend their money and time on what it calls fake medical practitioners, then go to hospitals too late for treatment that could save them. However, for the physicians who call themselves traditional healers, this order has a very bad taste. Sami Nikigali expressed their feelings. "We are not happy with that decision. The ministry should call us in a meeting and ask us if what we advertise is real. We cure sickness, but the problem is that traditional healers are undermined." Alex Rukangala, who claims his cures can ease sickness caused by the spirits of bad ancestors, says ads informed Rwandans about his power. "I heal the sickness from bad spirits of our ancestors. Hospitals cannot cure that sickness because their drugs never work. But we who know how to communicate with our ancestors can easily know where the problem is and prescribe traditional medicines. Radio talk shows normally bring us many clients. But look how this decision is going to affect us." Some traditional medical practitioners salute the health ministry's move. This woman says she hears cursed people, those who eat poisoned food, and others who are spiritually poisoned. But she gets more clients due to her efficiency. "I never support such advertisements. Like me, I got this power from my father. I never saw my father going to advertise my cured patients, tell the others. I even received patients from Uganda who came just because they know how I work." On the streets, many people also salute the ministry's decision, including Kigali resident Samuel Sikugabo. "Those talk shows were too much. They lie to people that they bring blessings and chase curses, that they increase their virility and enlarge sex organs. I never believe in them. If the government keeps on letting them, many ignorant Rwandans will cease to go to the hospitals." This is Eugene Uimana for VOA News in Kigali, Rwanda.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehi Swuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Please stay tuned to the sunny side of sports coming up at 18:30 UTC. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, John Dryden, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Hello, I'm Lino Armudu, host of Health Chat. Next week on Health Chat, we will discuss latest efforts to sustain the Global Fund to Fight AIDS, TB and Malaria, the largest global partnership addressing the three diseases. Our guest is Elizabeth Ivanovich, Director for Global Health at the UN Foundation. For your questions or comments, email us at healthchat@voanews.com. You can also reach us by phone to leave a message. Dial the international code for the United States, then dial 202-205-9942. The U.S. country code is 1. Dial 45 after you hear the station ID. Health Chat this Tuesday at 1730 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.